fellow classic TV fans, and welcome to Retro TV Radio. I'm your host, Pat McCormack. If you haven't already, please subscribe to this podcast and leave me a positive rating. It all helps. Tina Cole is entertainment royalty. After all, as the daughter of famed Yvonne King from the Singing King Sisters and the renowned keyboardist Buddy Cole, she was constantly surrounded by some of Hollywood's biggest names, and as such, her destiny was clear. In this interview, we discuss her new memoir, My Three Lives, which chronicles her unique experiences growing up in a famous family and the many ups and downs that went along with it. She eventually landed a television role in which she became a member of yet another famous family, and this one launched Tina Cole into stardom. It goes without saying that playing Katie Douglas on My Three Sons cemented the young actress a prominent place in classic TV history. It's no secret that fans adored her. This was made evident by the fact that Tina received more fan mail than any other actor in all the other successful Don Federson television productions. We discuss her fascinating experiences both in real life and on My Three Sons, as well as some ironic mutual experiences. Enjoy! Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the podcast the multi-talented Tina Cole. Tina!
How do you do, sir?
I do just fine, thank you.
Good.
We kind of chatted it up before we got started here, found out we had a mutual love for cats.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
And like parents talking about their children, you know, that conversation just could have went on for another 5 hours, I think.
I'll tell you one quickie. When my father was, he was a musical director for Rosemary Clooney and Bing Crosby, people like that.
Mr. Cole.
Yes, Buddy Cole. And Rosie played in Reno a lot. And one of our favorite restaurants was, and bar, it was a wonderful place called the Christmas Tree Inn on Mount Rose Highway. And the first time I went, I think I was maybe 10, and they had a lion cub just wandering the restaurant and bar. And I absolutely fell in love. It became my lion. His name was Samson. So, and every time we'd go back to the restaurant, you know, of course, he was bigger and bigger and bigger, and I, to the point where I could barely carry him. He got to be so big, became a full-fledged lion with a mane. But I have pictures of me holding him, and he was just one of my favorite kitty cats. Was my lion. I swore it was mine.
Well, you know, I'm going to want a copy of that picture for this, for the video version of this.
I can send it to you.
Oh, please.
And it's in my book, actually.
Well, yes. And we're going to talk about that, too. Because I'm excited. I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but I'm going to because I love memoirs. I'm on a big memoir kick these days. And when I saw you had one, it just came up in a feed somewhere online, and I went, oh my gosh, I wonder if she'd like to talk to me about that. And
Oh, yes.
Very, very honored to have you with me. You're a legend, and there's no two ways about it.
Sure, thank you.
You come from a legendary show business family, so thus, it flows in your veins. I mean,
yes, it does.
I was going to say, you are royalty, literally royalty, like a king family of royalties. And I think that's, that's amazing to me to talk to folks that come from such talented families and just how, you know, this stuff is, it's in your veins, like I said.
Yeah, it is. And you know, as a child, none of us, like my cousins, my kids that I grew up with are my cousins, none of us realized what our parents did. I mean, we knew that they sang and they recorded, but it was just like, wasn't that what all parents did? It just, you know, it, we had no idea. I didn't know about my dad until Facebook. I mean, years, you know, several years ago, I started really reading about my father. I had no idea that he was so revered.
Well, and I've seen past interviews with you, and I was thinking something must have made you think something, considering all the people that used to come and hang out at your place.
That was pretty exciting. I didn't know it at the time. It was just fun.
Right.
But as I look back and I go, wow, those, I mean, they were just, you know, just hanging out, partying all the time.
Doesn't that happen with everybody?
Well, exactly. Yeah.
Well, I mean, look, it show business of the golden era, which, you know, really your big claim to fame being My Three Sons. But your family had been part of that as well as you.
Yeah, it was a very small pond then.
Right. And the thing is, of course, most people know that are familiar with the workings of show business. It was pretty much a requirement to be a triple threat. You know, that term meaning, yeah, okay, so you can sing. I hope you can act and dance, too.
Right, exactly. And, well, dancing was my favorite thing in the whole world when I was little.
See, that's the things I look for. It's like, really? I would not have guessed that. I would have guessed it would be, well, one of the other two of your three lives. Sorry.
No, I wanted to be a ballerina. That was my, when I was a child.
Oh.
I started, my sister and I danced every morning, every day, you know, just around the living room. We made up dances. I started ballet at 4. And was on, they put me on toe at 5, which they never do.
Mm.
But I had such well-developed arches,
right,
that, you know, I held the Fouette record in my dance school from all the, even the older dancers. But I could not, I have like 4 shortened tendons or something in my, you know, in my calf, my thighs, I guess, in the, you know, the groin, if I can be so specific. And I never could do the extensions or the splits or the, you know, where they raise your leg up over your head. I could never do that. So that kind of squashed that idea. But I still love to dance.
Well, I'm right there with you. I can't do splits anymore either. At least not after that first time.
You're right. Exactly. Yeah.
Oops.
Yeah.
Not me for that.
That really was very disappointing for me. But we, you know, I also went into jazz and tap and all that stuff. So that and performance, I don't know what they call it. Because it's not really jazz. It's just
modern dance.
Maybe it's choreographed. I mean, like, you know, we danced, you know, all through the television shows. And we had some of the greatest choreographers and, you know, worked with some amazing people.
Well, and that is evident when you look back at some of these specials that... Well, I think one of the most amazing things is, and of course, I don't know this for sure, but it seemed like everybody got along.
We did pretty much. Love was the main thing. We would have our spats, and I tell about a few of them in the book, but they didn't last very long. And, you know, the love just permeated everything, and I know that there were people thought maybe we were a little corny and whatever, but what you saw was really what we were. We started doing we did every holiday together. We did programs. Every holiday we would do a show for ourselves. And,
right,
you know, produced, you know, with the costumes and everything.
Right.
And it just, So when, and the Christmas one was, wait, I've got a puppy here that is barking.
Oh, I was going to say, hey, doesn't it know it's a cats only show?
Really? Daisy, stop it.
Go tend to your garden.
Sorry about that. But so when, and the Christmas time, especially, we sang, and I mean, it was just, or at church or whatever, it was always a production.
Yeah.
With our family. I can't imagine doing, just having a party and people not writing special material and doing parodies. And, you know, that's what we did.
Right. Which in turn prepared you quite well.
Yes.
I have a musical background, and I studied with a voice coach named Judy Davis.
Oh my gosh, yes, of course.
You know Judy.
I did too.
Are you kidding?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
She was amazing.
Finally.
Not for long, but for a little, you know, for a tiny bit. Yeah, she was incredible.
Finally. You know, I've mentioned her name to quite a few singing actresses such as yourself, and of course nobody knows till I say, well, she helped Streisand. And then they're like, oh
that one. yeah no, she was amazing.
I spent almost 2 years with her.
I would have loved that.
Yeah, drove up to Oakland every week.
Yep.
And
yep.
She the most raspy voice you had ever heard. It's great. She goes, I can't sing a note, but I've got ears like a donkey.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I lived in Orinda. I went to high school in Orinda. Do you know where that is?
Well, of course.
Yeah.
The Orinda Theater owner is one of my good friends, Derek Zemrak.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You know, I would love to do I'd love to do something there.
Okay.
I know they do special events, so you hook me up.
I will.
Okay.
I will.
That was my high school days.
He owes me a favor, too, which is great.
Oh,
or a couple favors, now that I think about it,
yeah.
Derek.
But, yeah, no, I would drive to Oakland, you know, and study with Judy.
Yeah. Oh, isn't that something? That is so great. We have a mutual experience. But you know,
besides cats.
Yes, that, too. One of the things that I remember about Judy, though, which I thought was very, very, it made me think. Well, basically everything made me think, especially the way she taught the phonetic singable vowels, which I, to this day, feel is the most valuable thing I've ever. I mean, this lady could teach you how to sing an N. And an L. Oh,
yeah.
And what's the hardest word to sing, Judy? She went, well, that's easy. It's world. Sing world.
Yeah.
And I went, world.
Exactly. Open it
went,
up.
No, it is like this. And oh my gosh. But she posed a question to me because my specialty is guitar.
Oh.
But I sang too. I sang backup. I was not very much a lead singer. You can probably tell by the tonality of my voice. It just wasn't designed for that. And she asked the question of the class at that time, what is it that you are? Are you? In my case, it came out to be, I am a guitar player who sings. And in this case, I would ask Tina Cole, what do you categorize yourself as? A singer who acts, an actress who sings, a singer and dancer who doesn't do anything else. I'm curious if she posed that question to you. I'm wondering if,
yeah, an actress who sings. I never. Well, growing up, my mother always. We started singing on the way to school. My sister and my mom and I would sing, you know, side by side or something. And she said, Tina, you sing the lead because Kathy's a much better singer. So I never really fancied myself a singer. What I do, and still today, I tell stories with song. Mm. So, I mean, that's what I'm good at. You know, I'm not a great singer, although I got pretty good when we were on the road and doing one-nighters. They would go out for 6 or 8 weeks at a time. And my voice got pretty good. It was really strong. And I was the lead singer with the Four King Cousins. So I had a really strong, a good lead singer. And I had a really good range, pretty amazing range. But, you know, it's the last time the cousins got together for a little five-year reunion after 30 years. And we had to lower a few keys for me. And there was my little, there's always a break in between your chest voice and your head voice, or your, and mine is like the Grand Canyon. So I had to learn, there were a couple of notes that right where I needed to be the strongest that were just not there. I went back and I wish I had a Judy Davis to go to. But it was every time I get to those notes, it was like, oh, please make that note.
Yeah.
And because sometimes nothing would come out and sometimes three notes would come out.
Right. At once.
Yeah. But I can sing. I can tell a story.
Yeah.
You know, with my music. And to me, I mean, there are a lot of really great voices that don't make you feel anything.
Sure.
And then there's a Tony Bennett who hadn't had that great of a voice, but only he could make you feel.
Yeah.
I think that's, and then there are people like Streisand or, that can do both. But I think that's rare. And I would rather feel.
Right.
I think, and when I'm listening to someone, that's what attracts me to a singer.
Right. Well, and that's the thing that she also instilled in me was the understanding of just how important the lyrics were to those American standards.
Oh, yes. Weren't they fabulous?
Oh, my gosh. What was it? Moonlight in Vermont. I mean, folks, if you don't, just to read that, read those lyrics if you get a chance to Moonlight in Vermont, and you will see.
One of my favorites.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of.
I can't think of the name of the writer. In this world of ordinary people, I'm glad there is you.
Right.
That song, and the lyrics are just phenomenal. That was written for my Aunt Alice.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. That was just, then I think about that, I thought, wow, that's quite an honor.
True. Well, and I would think, like in acting, if you got the lines written for you, you're going to have a better opportunity to express it the proper way rather than a lot of what's considered popular music. I'm not knocking it because I'm more of into the modern style of music anyway, just because I like the whole package.
Yes,
but folks, like we're saying, you go back into the Great American Songbook, I think they call it, and look at what they were doing back in those days. It's just and just like with the Triple Threat. I mean, you look at what everybody had to do and how much rehearsal that had to take. And oh my gosh.
When I think about that, the old actors, the 30s, 40s, everybody tap danced. They sang, besides the acting, they did everything.
Right. Right. And now.
Even if they weren't that good at it.
Exactly. You made yourself good by how blood, sweat and tears, folks. Work. Not that the work isn't a complete and total pleasure, because it is. I mean, you're working, you're happy.
Yes.
Unless you're with tyrants,
And right, exactly.
And I know based on my past interviews with these, what do I call them? the Livingston brothers.
Yeah.
They're tyrants. Both of them.
Yeah, right.
And of course, folks who have heard those interviews go, Pat, what the hell are you talking about? The nicest guys on the planet.
Liar thing, I know.
And
they are.
Oh, my goodness. I had a great memory of Barry. My apparatus, which I record with, which isn't going to happen on this interview because it turned out that apparatus was bad. I kept hanging up on him.
Oh no.
In the middle of the interview.
Oh, God.
He's like, so when I tell you about this time when I got to ride around in a limousine with Elvis.
And then boom.
Dead silence.
Oh, no.
I'm like,
well, no.
What the heck? Well, why are you going to tell us about it? No answer. And I'm like, oh, good God. So it happened twice in the same interview. And that's when I realized there's a technical, you know, of course, it could be
a technical problem.
It could be the phone company.
No, they are. Aren't they just the sweetest guys in the whole world?
Well, and that's it.
And they've been around, you know, for so long and worked with so many great people.
Yeah. Oh, and Stanley, of course, with the stories he had. But, I mean, he was this treasure trove of knowledge.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
And, oh, my God, the educational value of that interview made it one of my highest listened to podcasts.
Oh, wow.
And that's with some real competition, too. I mean, of course, it's nothing's going to touch this one, I can tell already. But with that said...
Well, let's hope.
Well, and again, obviously, you stayed friends with these fellows, and I would assume. And
as a matter of fact, yes. Yeah, so we talk, you know, two or three times a year, not often, but we're going to do what's it called? Is it Chiller or Thriller?
Oh, Chiller. Right, I saw that.
Theater, the weekend before Halloween. So we're going to do a little mini My Three Sons at this horror, you know, sci-fi event.
Perfect.
My girlfriend said, I never thought My Three Sons was that scary.
But clearly science fiction. I mean,
right.
Look at all the testosterone.
Today it is. Yeah, really.
This is a male-dominated planet. Well, thank God Tina Cole came in and evened things out until she had three boys of her own.
I thought they were crazy when they told me that I was going to have triplets. I thought we didn't have fertility drugs in those days.
Right.
You know, and triplets were rare. And they said, if you're going to have triplets, I thought, nobody's going to buy that. And it turned out to be the highest rated show of the season.
Well, there you go. And synonymous with the title, obviously. You know, Katie has three sons.
Exactly.
But they could have called it, you know. We're changing the name of this show. Katie's Three Sons. But no, I mean, groundbreaking in that way. And I know there's a lot of backstory there.
Oh, yes.
In regards to you and Dawn. And I know that's what is this quote? I have a quote. How do you categorize your three lives? How do you categorize those three lives? The quote was, don't shy away from the parts that were challenging.
Yeah.
Now, I got to ask, without giving up too much, because we want folks, you got to get this book. You will find the links to getting it, by the way, in this description.
Yes.
And I'll actually verbally say it at the tag, but you didn't shy away. I have not had the pleasure to read this yet. But I'm going to, without giving away.
There might be a few surprises in there for you.
Well, I would hope. I mean, again, everybody likes a little intrigue, a little dirt. What would be something that would be like that you could share with us? Or again, you can say, well, just get the book.
Well, Well, I could give you a little teasers.
Yes, please.
A teaser would be good.
Yes.
Teasing. I spent several hours with Bill Cosby.
Well, that's enough of that one. Next.
Okay. I spent several hours with the Beatles.
Well, okay. Maybe I'm cutting you off a little. I'm cutting you off a little too quick here. Okay. Back to Bill Cosby.
No, those are kind of good ones. A lot of time with Troy Donahue and Bob Conrad. Those are in there. Those stories are in there. Those are good stories. Little salacious, something kind of fun.
Wow.
This is not salacious at all, but I had a wonderful experience for a minute. And no, not even a minute, with Tom Jones that I can tell you about. It's not, juicy at all or anything, but my brother-in-law, Jim Green, was a liaison between ABC and Tom Jones producers for his series, his TV series. And the first night, the opening of his show, Jim had arranged this big party for him at the candy store over on Sunset, I think, in Hollywood.
Right.
And my sister could not attend, so he asked me if I would be his date. And we were waiting, and you had to go through the bar to get back to the big ballroom or wherever, the private room where we were. And so we were waiting at the bar for Tom to come in with his entourage. And he arrived and said hello to Jim, and Jim said, "Tom, I'd like you to meet my sister-in-law. This is Tina Cole." And where most people of his stature would have been looking around the room, who's there, and giving me a cursory hello, he took my hands in his. He looked me straight in my eyes and said, "Tina, what a pleasure it is to meet you." That much time, seconds. But for those few seconds, I was the only person in the room. It was just amazing. And I was so impressed with that I thought, I am going to emulate that for the rest of my life. And I have tried to do that just that a few seconds of acknowledgement. I do it in the drive-thru. I'll do it at the movie theater, at the dry cleaners, whatever. That few seconds of acknowledgement of another human being.
Right.
Just is magical. Right. It can change, and it ripples. You feel good. That person feels good, and then they're nicer to the next person, and then person, and it just ripples out. And that man had no idea that he did that for me.
I have been waiting for that story. You got to ask me why.
Why? Yes, why? I do want to know why.
Because I read memoirs, and let's just say there's a couple of stories about him that weren't as shining armor as you just described. And I'm
not sure.
I'm such a fan. I'm a big back rack. Even though Judy Davis called him Back the Hack, I don't know why. he was not to me.
Back rack, Barry Manilow. I don't care what people say.
Well, and the thing is, it's like I read Barbara Eden's book, and her experience with him was a little... Cassandra Peterson, Elvira. Oh, my goodness. I wish I hadn't read that. It was just like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
What a brute. But
yes, yes.
Thank goodness that Tina Cole had a positive experience with this man who I looked so up to, you know, and then I'm looking at these memoirs and going,
You know what, what makes me sad is so many of them, of the memoirs, they're tell-alls, and they want to make them, they want to tell how many men you wanted them, how many, you know, how many drunks and binges and running off the set and, squirting at the trailer. I don't want to know that. I don't want to know that about Shirley Jones or Barbara Eden or, I don't want to know those things.
It's funny you mentioned Shirley Jones because I read hers and boy, she doesn't hold back anything.
I know. And why? I mean, there are things I could say this because I think it's funny. I had a really hard divorce with my second husband, with Beverly Garland's stepson. Mm. She became my real mother-in-law. So, and it was really hard, very nasty, very, rough. And I had 50 pages of stuff. I mean, really, the nitty-gritty, nasty, nasty stuff. And I got stuck. I couldn't write. I mean, I had the facts, but I was stuck for quite a while. And I started thinking about it. And I thought, people have survived affairs. They've moved on. Everybody I know probably has had some kind of experience with that. Maybe not personally, but with someone close to them. And who needs the dirt? At one point, I just said, suffice it to say, the next 2 years were hell. And I took those, I lined all of those, I kept the facts, because you have to have the facts. And I lined everything else out, and I took all the lined out material, and I put it in a file on my computer. And I thought, okay, if my ex-husband reads this and is not happy with what I've said, I can show him the 40 pages that I left out and said, well, this could have been in it. But I thought, readers don't need to know. What they need to know is how you came out the other end. How did you survive it? It doesn't matter to me. I don't think people really need to know that stuff. Not that, there's enough in there to understand what happened. But so I've still got those 40 pages tucked away just
well,
in case.
That's probably best. I mean, I'm a subscriber of Keep on the Sunny Side. Always on the sunny side.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's really what memoirs should be is
true.
How you survived. How you came out the other end and what's, the positive. I get teased a lot about being Pollyanna, now put on your rose-colored glasses. But I try to make a point of this in the book. I choose to be happy. I choose to see the good. To see the beauty, I think it's a choice that we make. We can make, or we should make.
Yeah.
And my cousins, they go, oh, yeah, well, fiddly-dee, tomorrow's another day, right? And I go, huh? And I say, yep.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think personally, just based off what you just said, we sold a few books just now. Because that's it. I agree. And it sounds like you temper it perfectly within the pages. I can't wait to crack the covers on that. I love them. I love these books. I love learning about. And of course, your show business life is so rich with amazing things, not just from My Three Sons, but throughout your family.
It was an amazing, wonderful.
I can tell. It really was. I can tell.
Yeah.
Even though you have a dog and not enough cats.
Yes.
People are like, huh? What are they talking about?
But, really?
Well, I obviously have to ask everybody's question on their mind was, what was your favorite experience, just one, from being on My Three Sons? I know, it was like, well, get the book. There's about 50 in there, my guess is.
Yeah, really? Yeah. Now, you know,
I know. Is that like, am I just like, okay, Pat, well, there's like a million or there's none, or what a really crummy question.
Yeah. Well, you know, we didn't film in front of a live audience. So it was done like movies. So we had one camera. It was a lot of work. The way Fred McMurray shot, the McMurray method, we call it. He was only there for a month, the first month of shooting, and then came back maybe a month and a half later and was there for a month. So all of his scenes had to be done, at one time. I mean, while he was there. And then we had to go back around and do all of our scenes, do all of our close-ups. Our everything with like our close-ups were done with our dialogue coach who was a woman standing on an apple box next to the camera reading Fred's lines, and
a human teleprompter is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, it was just really we were never really social. The group was not really a social group. It really just was work. I wish we had, we didn't do bloopers in those days. We didn't do outtakes, but I'll tell you one of the funniest things that happened. Fred McMurray could say more with one eyebrow than some actors can say with their entire face, or their body. I mean, he was just a master. And he was very introverted. I'm sure the boys said this. You know, he was very shy. He was cut up, stayed away from. As soon as someone would come on the set, the newspaper would go up. And not because he was stuck up or, felt he was too good to talk to anybody. He just didn't know what to say. But he would get on the set and was just came to life. It was hysterical. This one scene, Katie is in labor. And of course, I only had one labor pain.
Not three.
That was all loud in those days. One, oh, it's the baby. That was it. It wasn't until Murphy Brown when women started screaming, Robbie is on bivouac with his Army Reserve unit, and they're trying to get him. Of course, this is the middle of the night, and, they're trying to find him, and so Dad is the one that's taking care of Katie. And I go in, I say, Dad, I think it's time, and he is running back and forth from his room to my room while this dialogue is going in, and he's putting his outer clothes over his pajamas. He's putting on his, hopping into his pants as he's trying to see if I'm okay. And then he goes back in, then he gets a shirt and he puts it over his pajama shirt. And then he gets a jacket and he gets, all this and a tie, of course. And the last one is he's got the tie on now, and he comes into my room. And of course, he's such a good bumbler, stuttering and, stammering and just, and he turns around for a brief second to zip up his fly. And it took him a little, he didn't turn around as fast as he did in the rehearsal. So he finally turns around and he just stands there with his legs apart. He got his tie caught in the zipper, and this long tie is flapping between his legs. And he just shrugged, you know, put his hands on his head, you know. Well, we laughed so hard that it took, I don't know how many takes to finally get it right without us just busting up. Yeah. So that was really fun. You know, yeah, that was a funny story. I don't know, you know, if there were, you know, that when you said something really special or whatever, it really wasn't. You know, it was just, we go work, you know. But there were times, because of the way we shot, where Katie had Don Patterson, our producer, executive producer, wanted the pregnancy to look real. So instead of putting a pillow around my waist like everyone had always done for 1,000 years, he had a whole bodysuit made for me, several. And each one was padded with lamb's wool and foam rubber and in the belly and the, you know, the bust, so that, you know, every several months I'd get bigger and bigger and bigger. And the last one, he wanted to see me walk. So I put the last suit on, the big one, and I put on a, you know, maternity dress, and I went to his office and walked and said, no, it's not right. So he sent it back to costume and wardrobe. When I got it back, the whole inside of the suit was covered in fishing weights. And there was one big string of fishing weights that I had to tuck into my bra. So this suit weighed about 15 pounds. So, you know, I went back and walked with him for him. And he said, oh, yeah, okay, now you look like you're lumbering a little. And I'd hang them because I had to do some quick changes. We had our quick change dressing rooms on the set. And they'd open up my door, and here were these three bodysuits all done with, you know, lambs. Well, they looked like the three bears, you know, baby bear, mama bear, and baba bear. You know, these staring at you, these bellies. And there was one day where we shot, I was not pregnant. In one scene, I was 9 months pregnant. And the next, I was 3 months pregnant. And the next scene, I had already had the babies. You know, that's the way we shot. We had to have Polaroids taken. I wish I had stock in Polaroid at the time. The beginning of every scene, in the middle, at the end, because of all the editing that had to be done.
Did it ever throw a wrench in the whole thing? I mean, this discombobulated way of shooting, which is common, not common, but common knowledge of this show.
No, it isn't. Yeah. And that's what attracted, you know, a big star, right, like Fred McMurray and Brian Keith, and then John Forsythe and Henry Fonda, who all did shows for Federson that shot that way. That was what was so attractive, because then they had 10 Fish. Months to do, you know, whatever else they wanted. So it was a really good learning experience. I mean, you had to learn how to, like, because they would, like, the first time that happened to me, where it was the first week of shooting, and it was Robbie and Katie falling in love and all that, and getting married. And at one point, we break up the night before the wedding. We break up, and I'm over at my aunt's in Pasadena crying, and Dad comes over to talk to me. And in the master shot, I had real tears flowing. This is my first week. And in his close-up, I had real tears flowing, and, you know, ready for my close-up. And they said, okay, let's go to the kitchen. We're going to do scene, blah, blah, blah. And it was
stop,
like,
crying,
what?
Tina.
You know, excuse me. Yeah, really. And a month and a half later, when Fred was gone, they said, oh, we got an extra half hour. Remember that scene with Katie? We got to do that close-up. So they gave me the Polaroid of what I was wearing and, you know, what my hair looked like. And they gave me the script. I mean, I hadn't seen a script in a month and a half. And said, okay, we'll shoot in a half an hour. It was so, it was, and like, again, with the dialogue coach, you know, on the back. In fact, Stanley said one time they used a mop for for Fred McMurray. So, you know, and it was, I don't think I had, I didn't get the real tears going for my close up, which made me really sad. It was, because I really had it in a main shot. You know, so you had to learn really fast how to work that way. And my fans are the ones that have said, so the other thing too, Pat, is that if you didn't see the catch the show when it ran on television, or happened to catch the rerun that ran once in reruns in the summer, you had no idea what the show was going to look like. Even though you had read the script, you know, months before. I mean, fans will say, you remember the time that you did this and Robbie said that? I go, no, I don't. And, or they'll say, you know, your hair was parted on the wrong side. I mean, they know more about me than I know about myself. And one time, so when you're a featured player, and I was a featured player for several years before I was cast as Katie, you always wear your own clothes, unless it's a special, you know, specialty costume. And I wore this green, Kelly green, a dark Kelly green dress with white collar and cuffs in as a feature, you know, as when I was a featured player. And I played Robbie's girlfriend, Joanne. And I think that this is the show that they actually used for my screen test. Well, I wore it as Katie in the first year of their show. And people said, you know, and I didn't realize it. Nobody caught it. And a fan said, it's odd that Joanne and Katie have the same dress.
Seriously?
Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
Did you know?
Well, it brings up the question. I mean, have you seen all the episodes in their entirety?
No.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, I tried to. The problem is when you do it, when MeTV runs them, they've been cut. They've been edited.
Yeah.
So a lot of the stuff that I remember, like, and in season 12, Robbie was not in season 12. He had left the show. And like there's one show where I get a job as a singer in a coffee house. Oh, and this is funny too. Like, of course, fans had to tell me this. Yeah. But it was espresso spelled backwards. So it's Usurpsy. Or something. It was the name of the coffee house. And we all said, oh, yeah, it's an espresso house. And I didn't know that espresso was not, that isn't how you pronounce it. There's no X. It's
right.
It's espresso. Well, I called it espresso, but nobody caught that except a fan did. But I was in that coffee shop and I sang at the audition. And then I did a whole number that Don Grady actually wrote for me to sing about us in the show. And MeTV cut those out.
Yeah. You know, I mean, look, I know they need to advertise. I know. But these shows should not be, they shouldn't be, you should not carve them up, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they're American history. I mean, literally.
Yeah. So I've not seen them all. And especially season 12, I didn't see a lot of season 12. My girlfriend has been, she works from home and she works on her computer. And so she, and my three sons should be up when my three sons comes on. So she'll tape them and say, I'll be over there. She want to watch a couple of shows. Well, yeah, why not? And there are some you know, shows that I don't even remember doing.
Right. That must be surreal.
Yeah.
Just to go, there I am.
Yeah, and I guess
but
I did that.
I don't know. I don't remember any of that.
Yeah, I know. But my fans know everything.
Well, and here's your chance, folks, to know even more. All right. Tina Cole, My Three Lives, a Memoir.
Uh-huh.
That is the title. Now, how do we get this book, Tina?
It can be purchased on Amazon, Barnes & Noble online, Bear Manor, the publisher. It also is in a Kindle. And I'm just really excited about this. I just finished narrating the audio.
Oh, wonderful.
That's not out yet, but that will be out soon. And I think it's almost more fun because I'm telling the stories.
Well, I can look, you told me you had an interview that went 5 hours before we started. And I kind of see why, because you're just awesome.
Your
storytelling is top notch.
Oh, thank you.
Clearly, just a genuinely good person, and okay. There is a website too, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, you can get it if you go to my Facebook, my official
Facebook
page. You can also buy an autographed copy.
Right, I noticed something about that too. There's a thing called a book plate that I'd never heard of before.
Well. So many people bought their books on Amazon that they would like an autograph.
Right.
So I said, well, why don't we do, I think they call them book plates. I looked at it. I had to Google it. And so if they go to my store on my Facebook page, if they've already got a book, they'll they can order a book plate. And it's on, you know, the real sticky paper. And I'll autograph it personally to them and then send them the book plate and they can tape it, you know.
Adhere it.
Right into their book.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think that is so brilliant. It's the first I'd ever seen that.
Good.
I mean, maybe everybody does it. I don't know. But I was like,
I don't know.
That's a really,
just kind
really.
I scratched my head one day and said, because a lot of people say, well, how do I get an autograph?
Right. Other than to send you the whole book and then have you pay the shipping to get it back. That's brilliant.
Right. Yeah. So a lot of people have wanted that. So, you know, maybe they didn't know they could get it at my store already autographed autographed.
That's true, too. But I think that you have both those options available is just, that's marketing genius right there.
Thank you. Thank you.
Not to mention those pictures now.
Yes. You know what? It's got a lot of pictures. And I you know, a lot of the memoirs, a lot of the books have them all clumped in the center.
Right.
Just a group of pictures. I didn't want that. I wanted the pictures with the stories.
Good.
So my pictures are spaced out throughout the book. I even have some recipes in there.
Beautiful.
And I sing in a couple little places.
Even better.
I don't know that anybody's done that, but I thought, I sing. Maybe I should. So every now and there's, you know, I'll sing a little something. And that would have been written, you know, just written. But as I'm doing the audible, I might as well sing it.
Well, there you go. I mean, you said earlier you like to tell a story when you're singing. So, I mean, just sing the whole book next time.
Yeah.
I mean,
you know what I wanted to use? I wanted to use the Four King Cousins have a wonderful arrangement of God Only Knows.
Mm.
And I wanted to use just a little snippet in the introduction of the book, just the God Only Knows What I'd Be Without You.
Right.
And into the introduction. And then I've got at the end, I wanted to do another of the Four Cousins singing, Memories of the Way We Were, you know, just that little bit to end it. And then, because I'd heard that you can do 9 seconds or something and not have to pay a royalty.
Right.
I don't know what the royalties are, if they're crazy. But you know, as I was Googling further, you know, it's not worth it.
Right.
I don't want to get caught doing something that, you know, not paying a royalty for just that tiny little snippet.
But, how dare you? How dare you plagiarize yourself?
Yeah. And I'm singing it.
Exactly.
I mean, it's my recording.
Doesn't that claim ownership right there?
But, I mean, but Brian Wilson wrote it, or, yeah, you know, whoever wrote The Way We Were.
Right.
And I did another one with my son, Volney, when he was, I think, 8. We did a medley from where he's singing from Tom Sawyer, and about what's right, what's wrong, try to fight or go along, you know, how can you win? And then I come in with, remember when the circus came to town and you were frightened by the was it nice to be around someone that you knew, someone who was big and strong and looking out for you? And he sings, and me against the world. And and then we sing the rest of You and Me Against the World. Aww. Together. And it was so sweet. And I have not a good recording of it, but if I can use that. And then that's going to be another, you know, another royalty. I don't know. So unfortunately, I don't think the audience is going to get that. The readers are going to, listeners,
right,
are going to get that. But I thought, it would be wonderful.
None of it old enough to be public domain yet, I would
think.
But eventually.
And they said, put something that's public domain. I said, that's not the point.
Right, exactly. You want to use the specifics of the material. Yeah, I mean, you can pick anything that's public domain. Put some Mozart in there. You got it.
But there are little snippets without music, without anything, that they were written anyway. And I'm just so in the audio, I'm singing them.
How wonderful.
You know, so, yeah. People are enjoying it. Now, I have to say that the first printing, there were a lot of typos.
Oh.
And I was very unhappy. Mm. So the second printing, they got rid of most of them. I guess, you know, it's quite a process. You know, you can read it and read it and read it, and have 4 editors reading it, and you still miss stuff.
I have heard that story more times than you know. And I am the king of the typo. That's what I call myself. So believe me, I relate to both sides of that. And it's hard. It's tedious is what it is.
Yes.
And that's, nobody wants to do that, you know? It's like,
exactly.
If you want a place for artificial intelligence, just have it fix the typos, okay?
Please. But you know what? If you have a word it's a typo, but it's a real word, you know? I mean, the typo is a real word, even though it's not the word you wanted. Not the meaning you wanted. And that happened that really I didn't understand it, because I was talking about when I went to the temple in the LDS church, and I went to the temple for the first time, and I explained what that was. And it's where you go and you take out your covenants, you know, with God. You make promises with God. And I put covenant, you know, I spelled it right. And there, the editor changed it, or the type, you know, they use a program or whatever, and they changed it to confidence. Well, I didn't even know that was a word.
Me either.
Yeah, guess what? It is, but it doesn't mean the same thing I wanted.
Of course not.
You know, and they thought that I had made a typo. No, and that's all been changed in the books that people are getting now.
Oh, the English language. It never ceases to amaze me.
Oh, and what? I made a huge mistake, and that I didn't know until I was reading. I was the first readerette, by the way.
But of course. Now, I hope there's a picture of that. I mean, there's already a Playboy Bunny picture. I'm very curious about that, by the way. But
there is a Playboy Bunny picture in there. But There, we cannot find one picture of us. I've gone back to the news, to the Oaklands, to the Raiders.
Wow.
Yeah. And but I had said that it was, and you know, I was a senior in high school. I graduated in '61, and then for some reason I said that it was '61, and I just, as I'm reading, I'm going, wait a minute, that's not right. By the time I graduated, it was June, you know, football season is in the fall. So I was a Raiderette in 1960, not 61.
Right.
So, you just keep finding little things.
Wow.
But not that anybody cares, but
I care.
I care too.
I mean, as a true Niner fan, I really care. those Raiders. Well,
there were more of us than there were in the stands. There were more of us on the field than there were in the stands that first year. And you know what? And I tell the story in the book, but their colors were gold and black, not silver and black. Uh-huh.
Interesting.
Nobody knew that.
Did they not want to clash with the 49ers? Is that it?
Exactly. They didn't have enough money for uniforms.
Oh, but of course.
So they borrowed uniforms from the from UOP.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that first year. Isn't that funny? Isn't that crazy?
Now, that's just golden. Ah, no pun intended. That's just silver. I should say that's just silver and black.
Yeah, yeah. But I looked and looked to find a picture.
Well,
and I'm gonna find one. So if anybody finds one, let me know.
There you go, folks. You have your assignment.
Yeah,
that's fantastic. Oh dear, this has just been a wonderful interview. I feel like I've known you forever, and it's just wonderful.
I feel the same way.
Well, I think I'm going to let you get on with your day, but folks, go find Tina's book on her official Facebook page and look at all the other fun stuff that she has available. These pictures, like I said, the Playboy Bunny one, but I wanted to move. I'm like, huh? Katie. Katie.
Hey, what girl, what woman in those days wouldn't want to see what the bunny suit would do for them?
Exactly.
And it was a magic suit.
You look so very comfortable in it, too. And again, that question, Katie, what have you done? What has happened? No more wholesome Katie anymore.
Really?
Oh, my goodness. But I also see that you do kind of a cameo thing where you'll do a video shout-outs or a personalized videos for folks. Is that still happening?
Absolutely. Yeah. I'll do a birthday greeting or a happy anniversary or, whatever. If someone just wants to talk for a few minutes, they can order that on my page as well.
Right. And the greeting cards too, by the way.
I didn't want
to leave that out.
Thank you.
Fun stuff. All good stuff. So I'm going to go ahead and wrap this up. If you'll stay on with me just for a second so we can say goodbye formally and talk about our cats for one more second. And again, folks, this has been Tina Cole, just a talent, a delight, a wonderful person, and a legend, let's face it. Thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, Pat, it has been really fun.
Oh, well.
Really fun. I've enjoyed it so much.
Well, you just keep going and keeping us fans happy because, like I said, I can't wait to read this book. And I know there's a lot of other folks that are going to feel exactly the same way. So thank you again.
I hope so. You're very welcome. Thank you for the interview. I really enjoyed myself.
Oh, thank you, dear one. Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
There you have it. Another Retro TV Radio in the books. Be sure to check out the official Tina Cole Facebook page to keep up to date on all she has going on. And of course, pick up an autographed copy of her book, My Three Lives. I'm reading it right now and I can tell you, you will not be disappointed. You will of course find the link to the page in my description.
Once again, this is Pat McCormick from the Golden Rage of TV. Thanks for listening to Retro TV Radio. You can follow me on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram at Golden Rage of TV, and on Twitter, or X, at Golden Rage of TV1.